Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Katie Britton. Jandy Nelson's debut novel, The Sky is Everywhere, reduced its readers to tears and captured their minds with its beautiful language. Since then, readers have been eagerly awaiting her new novel, I'll Give You the Sun, and they won't be disappointed. It's just as stunning. So it is a great pleasure to welcome back Jandy Nelson to the Roundtable.
Thank you so much. I am so very happy to be here.
You pack a punch. You really do. In your first novel, The Sky is Everywhere, and then with this novel, how is it for you knowing that having written your debut novel with so much emotion and so many beautiful sentences weaved together, and then coming up with your second novel, did you feel there was a lot of pressure for you to make it just as wonderful, but in its own way?
Well, first of all, thank you so much. Those are just wonderful, wonderful words to hear. I think what happens is when the characters arrive and they arrive with their stories, you're so immersed in the new world and making that world come alive that I think when you're writing, you don't think about it. You don't think about, there's always the idea of the sophomore slump, and I guess, yes, you worry about that, but I think when you're in the process, you just want to do justice to your characters and to this story, and so that kind of overtakes you.
So this novel follows twins, Noah and Jude, and Noah gets to tell the first part of their story, and Jude tells the other part, but at the same time, even though they are twins, but because they're telling the story from their point of view, they're both missing key parts from the other person's.
Exactly. You know, this was a very interesting process writing this story. It took me 3.5 years, and I had this idea of these shifting narrations and these dueling point of views and in two different time periods for reasons because, you know, there is mystery elements, and I thought that would really help with tension. And I wanted the reader's perceptions to shift with the shifting narrators. And I had that vision from the start that it would be this braid. But I actually didn't realize till I was in the process of writing it that to write it, I would almost have to write three novels. So I wrote Noah's story start to finish, and then I wrote Jude's story start to finish, and then the praying started that it would actually work. So this is like 2.5 years into this process, and when I started interweaving the stories, which really became the novel and the third novel. And so that was the process, and that's how it came about. And I very, very much wanted, it was very, you know, it was a complicated structure, but it was, I very, very much wanted it to be this braid and for, you know, that you would only ever see Noah from Jude's perspective at 16 and Jude from Noah's perspective at 13 and 14.
That's really interesting because they are twins. And if you're writing one continual story, okay, so we'll take Noah. And since you were writing Noah at 13 and 14, and then you obviously know in your head where you want them both to go. But if you're taking just those early years from his perspective, did you have an idea of that you wanted to start at the very beginning then with Noah and then move on to Jude, or did you start with Jude and then go back to Noah?
You know, in the novel, it starts with Noah, and those were things that all came about at that sort of 2.5 year mark where I had both stories and had to really figure out how it was going to work to be one novel. And it really became a whole different thing at that point. But also, I think what was really interesting about it for me, it was, you know, because they're twins, and I wanted their voices to be really distinct. And so it was also bizarre is when I was writing Noah's story or Jude's story, I'd have to physically lock the other file on the other twin's story so I wouldn't go back because I wanted to be so immersed in their world and make sure the voices were really, really their own and the characters were their own and that whole story was distinct of the world of that twin. But I had to keep both stories in my head at all times, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Even though I was just working in Noah's story, I definitely knew what Jude's whole trajectory was from the beginning.
Wow.
It was complicated. It really was. It was challenging. It was a challenging novel, but it was also so exciting for me. Like, I loved writing this book, and I got so close to these characters. They're so close to my heart. Even now, I'm sort of still so involved with them in my head, even though the book's over and the book's in the world.
Well, it's not over because you get to talk to people and all your readers about it. So that's the beauty. They can continue living within you.
I know, that's true. And it's also very weird that because, like, there's this thing when you've been, like, with these characters for, like, 3.5 years and it's just you and them. That's it. And then suddenly, like, people talk to you and they bring up Noah. And, like, my first thought is always, how do you know Noah?
Well, because you create such vibrant characters, and your use of words is just stunning. And
oh my God, thank you. Thank you so much. Can you come over and just live in my house with me?
Well, because you grab the reader. We feel what the characters are feeling. And you also, you get us into their minds, and we're feeling their emotions. And Jude and Noah have been fractured. They used to be able to, I love the scene where they're playing rock, paper, scissors, and they always throw the same thing at the same time, and they just say, we still have it.
Right, right.
Then they fracture apart, but they both have very unique touchstones to bring them into their own worlds, to make them feel that I'm okay being who I am, and Noah's is painting in his head.
Yes. That was one of the great joys of writing the book for me, was Noah's visual sensibility was so fun for me as a writer to experience. I mean, in so many ways. I mean, even seeing artwork anew through his eyes was very exciting. Like, for instance, like, you know, Noah has Edvard Munch's The Scream on his ceiling, and I feel like I've seen that painting so many times, but seeing it through Noah's eyes, it was like it knocked me out, you know? Mm-hmm. But yeah, one of my favorite parts of the books was writing Noah's mind paintings. So he, you know, he's always painting in his head, so the titles of the paintings just appear throughout his narrative, and that was really, really fun for me. I mean, I think I have a visual sensibility in the of the world. I mean, I'm very visual anyway, so I really got to go for it with him because he's like 10 times more visual than I am, you know?
Well, right. Any situation he finds himself in, he retreats into his head, and you break up the story, and it says self-portrait, throwing armfuls of air into the air. Or portrait, mother in blinding color.
Yeah.
And just those titles creates a blast of imagery in the reader's mind.
Thank you. I hope so. I mean, my intention was for Noah's world and his narration to really be visual and to have the reader be able to see his paintings, obviously, without ever seeing anything he's painted, you know? Mm. So that was what I was hoping. And, you know, and that was very different than Jude's world because she has a very different sensibility, you know.
She does. And as you said, we're going back and forth between past and present and Noah and Jude. And during that time, they've really flip-flopped the personalities. When they were younger, Jude was the outgoing one. Her mother was always saying, don't be that girl. So what she was wearing, what kind of makeup she was putting on, and how she was acting and really acting out, just don't be that girl. Where Noah was, he was the weird one, the strange one, the one that his father seemed to be embarrassed about because he wasn't your typical playing football and basketball and watching the sports with him and wanting to do guy things with him. And Noah always felt fairly out of place, but he found at home with his mother and talking about art, and she appreciated his penchant for art. But then they flip sides, and Noah does become what his father really wants. And to an extent, it's nice that he was able to start building that relationship up with his father, but he was losing that be true to yourself mantra that his mother had always ingrained in him.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, it's funny. There's this, the idea in the book, in the later narrative, in the later time period, a lot of the book, that narrative is about stone carving. And so there's that Michelangelo idea about how the statue's in the rock and the stone carver just has to find it, or he carves until, you know, he said something, you know, you carve until you can set the angel free. And I feel like the characters, when they're 16, especially Noah and Jude, both of them actually, and Guillermo, all of them in some ways are that statue in the stone. And they have to break through. And the stone is almost like societal expectations, familial expectations, grief, fear, everything. And it's almost like they have to break free of that stone to be themselves again. And I agree. I was so happy about Noah's relationship with his father kind of coming around. But, you know, I hope at the end of the book in some ways that they've all, well, I don't want to spoil, but, you know, that is a journey with identity, is sort of, you know, breaking free and being truly authentically ourselves in the world. I think that's, you know, it's a challenge for everybody and especially teenagers, you know.
Oh, absolutely. And that stone carving, that brings us to Jude. and warned not to be that girl, and then flip-flopping as she gets older to being on her boycott and just wearing very baggy things and not wanting to be noticed by people. And she's really following the Bible that her grandma Sweetwine has left her. But it's not our conventional Bible, because God isn't God. It's Clark Gable.
Yes. Everyone should know God is Clark Gable in this book.
Which I love just thinking about him with that smile and his ears and everything every time she says, oh, goodness, Clark Gable.
That was a lot of fun. Grandma Sweetwine was a lot of fun in this book. She's a ghost, by the way.
Yes, she is. And she shows up to tell Jude, you know, you really need to follow your heart. Stop this boycott thing. Do you see how cute that new guy is?
Well, I have to tell you, it's very funny. In Jude's story, you know, it didn't start with that Grandma Sweetwine was a ghost, but it was almost like she wouldn't shut up. And finally, I was like, you know what? Okay, you can be a character. You know, you're in the book. I relent, you know, because she was just so big in my mind and so big in Jude's mind and so big in the story. And then finally, I was like, okay. And actually, I remember the next day, like, opened a file and it was like something like, holy crap, there's another ghost.
So. But it's in a good way, in the sense that it's not this mysterious person that's around Jude. I mean, Jude actually talks to her because it's helping Jude work through the things that she has done, the things that Noah has done, and trying to make sense of who she wants to be. And all of those little sayings that Grandma Sweetwine has left in the Bible. I mean, one, if a boy gives a girl an orange, her love for him will multiply. And I love that scene where this boy throws her an orange and all of a sudden she catches it and throws it right back at him.
That's funny. When she says, no, you don't.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I love that Jude is such a superstitious girl and that Grandma Sweetwine sort of passed that down to her. And I really feel like it's a sort of important psychological element throughout the story, and that the sense that she's a girl that feels, you know, after things that happen, very unsafe in the world and very fearful. And they provide her with some sense of control over her life and the world. But at the same time, I think she's a very creative mind, and as Grandma Sweetwine, too. And so I think there's a lot of fun within the family. And I think, you know, I'd come from a very superstitious family, so that was very natural for me that was part of their family and her character.
And as we're reading through, we obviously get to see all sides of the story and how it's playing out. And this fracture that's happened between Noah and Jude and really the whole family and them trying to find out who they are, they still have this pull. And the reader is feeling that unmistakable sadness and loss that each of them have by not being able to just go to the other one. You have these different scenes where one of them will try, and then all of a sudden it just completely shatters again.
Yeah. It's a very painful story, absolutely. And I think that, you know, it's funny, when I think about the book, I think about it as like a story of like all these interweaving love stories and very passionate first love romantic stories, but also as this, yes, this very intense family story and a love story between the twins and everybody, mothers and daughters, fathers and sons, but especially between the twins themselves. And ultimately, I think the trajectory of the story is, will they get it together? Will they become Noah and Jude again? Will they be able to surmount everything that happened and, you know, feel this tremendous love and bond that they have? I am sorry that it's so sad and painful, but I'm also happy that that came across, you know, that you wanted them to work it out.
Right, and it's the competition between them. I think there's always going to be a sibling rivalry, no matter how old or how young the siblings are, but when they're twins and then you have a mother who says, well, let's have a contest. Who can get into this amazing gifted art school? And we'll see who is going to win, which just seems so wrong on so many levels. But they've always had this competitiveness with each other.
Absolutely. I mean, I think Noah says it very early on in the book when he says, you know, when he draws them with see-through skin, he knows that there are rattlesnakes in their bellies. And I think that in some ways with these kids, it's a bit of a perfect storm for a sort of catastrophic sibling rivalry because, yes, they're twins, so completely close in age and also have completely similar goals and passions. And again, yes, a mother who shares those passions, but, you know, is also a little bit withholding, and they so crave her attention. I mean, that's the thing. You want them to get back to the sibling harmony, but it's definitely a story about sibling rivalry.
They say that we know that Jude won Dad. We know without a doubt Dad will pick Jude if there's both of them hanging off a cliff, but Mom is still up for grabs. So they would compete endlessly that they are moms.
Absolutely. It's not a great situation, you know, but every family has these complexities and intricacies, both good and bad, in their dynamics. And I think, you know, for me, that's why I really love writing about families, and that's why I love writing about siblings, because it's just so loaded. I mean, these are very loaded relationships.
Well, this novel is so amazing. Jandy, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today.
Oh my God, thank you so much for everything. It's been a pleasure and it's been wonderful. Thank you.
Again, Jandy Nelson's novel is I'll Give You the Sun. It is published by Dial. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.